Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
That's un-American. Is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 17th, 2011. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the easy way to sell or recycle the used gadgets lying around your home or office for a 5% bonus payment for your used gadgets. Go to gazelle.com and use the bonus code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And joining us is Lance Ulanoff. You might know him from PCMag.com, but he is now a man about town.
Free agent.
You can find him right at LanceUlanoff.com. Lance, great to have you back on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be in your new studio. It looks awesome.
I can't wait till you get a chance to come out here and see it in person. It's going to be fun to show it off. We've got a bunch of people coming this weekend.
That's right.
Looking forward to it. We were talking about the studio before the show, and
our desks apparently are going to be where the hors d'oeuvres are served.
This is.
You get to clear the monitors.
We'll see how it looks on Monday. Yeah.
There will still be sandwiches on Monday. Don't worry about it.
Some stains.
All right. We got some Google Facebook disputes to talk about. We are going to explain fanboys to you, but let's start off with Amazon taking over the government and the world. First, a ComScore report coming out from June shows that Amazon is not only the number one retailer traffic-wise in the world, one in five users worldwide visited Amazon in June.
One in five, but that
20% of the world.
But that number is less than the United States. It's like what? It's
20% of internet users in the world.
Sure,
that's kind of a different.
That's the world to me. No, you're right.
The only world I know.
20% of internet users, and that puts them in front of eBay, which reached 16% of the internet population. China's Alibaba number three. But yeah, as you were pointing out, Ayaz, Amazon number three in the U.S., but still number one in the world because they're so strong in Europe and Asia.
Yeah, the surprising thing is that number one and two in the U.S. was Walmart and HP. And Walmart, I understand.
Walmart
HP.
Has virtually no penetration outside the United States. What are people doing at HP?
I can't. You know what? They're buying laptops and desktops.
Yeah, that's right.
They're buying, that's actually the best news I've heard for HP in a long time. Because obviously, we're also talking about how nobody's buying the touchpad right now, and they are still buying the desktops and laptops, and we're heading into that holiday, that back to school buying season. So something to smile about at HP's headquarters.
Yeah. But I mean, you can buy laptops through Amazon as well. The fact that HP would beat Amazon as far as visits from internet users in the U.S., where Amazon, you can buy toilet paper and all sorts of other things as well, that surprises me.
You don't buy your toilet paper from HP?
No, should I be?
You don't buy TP from HP?
Yeah,
but it's HP. Amazon is really sort of this perfect environment. I've talked to people about how they shop now. You know, they go to these stores and they look at products and they look at all kinds of products. I mean, virtually anything you can think about, they use the real world stores as showrooms, and then invariably they say, I go to Amazon. Now I don't know exactly where the disconnect happens on HP and how for. Maybe just desktops and laptops, they end up there. But Amazon really, for all of these other products, beats so many other sites, including eBay, which may have what you need and may not.
And I think it's worth noting Alibaba in the number three retail position. Everyone who does even know about Alibaba knows that they're a search engine company, and they've got Yahoo has a stake in them, but they do a lot more. They are sort of comparable to Amazon in a way in China in that they're diversified into a lot of different areas. As evidenced by that, Amazon Web Services announced today AWS GovCloud. This is designed to allow U.S. government agencies and contractors to move more sensitive workloads into the cloud by addressing their specific regulatory needs. Now, there's something called ITAR. When I've talked to people in the defense industry about this, it's a big problem in efforts to share. Because ITAR stands for International Traffic in Arms Regulations, and it means your data isn't necessarily confidential, but you can't share it outside of the United States. In fact, there was a big controversy over encryption technology back, you know, 10 years ago that ran into ITAR regulations because PGP was falling under this, or mm-hmm. they tried to make it fall under this. So what this does, what this Amazon Web Service does, is says we have made it so that logically and physically no one outside the U.S. can get into this cloud, therefore it meets your regulatory requirements.
I mean, it seems like a good move from Amazon, but the thing is, I mean, we've seen Amazon outages in, like, I think it was North Carolina that affected a whole bunch of different companies. Is this something that the government would want to do for security if this could go down, or are they now going to go towards the cloud? Because how many lost laptop stories have we seen, or how often do we see lost USB keys and things like that?
Well, I mean, what about the Amazon AWS going down? It did recently again, but there was one weekend where it was like a 4-day weekend mm-hmm. where, I mean, a million startups, pretty much everybody was down for days on end.
And it got struck by lightning in Europe, one of the servers, and that brought down a bunch of sites in the EU for at least a day, I think. But, you know, the thing that attracts me to this, and I think the thing that may attract the government agencies, is that I always remember 10 years ago after 9/11 when I talked to people in government about data sharing and information sharing, and they kept talking about stovepipes. So if everything is in the cloud, and as long as it can be shared just within the U.S., this may make it easier for interdepartmental cooperation and maybe sort of getting information to the people needed a lot more quickly.
Yeah, do you think we just notice these outages of Amazon Web Services for the same reason we notice Gmail outages, because it's so widespread? There's probably outages in all kinds of servers. In fact, there are outages in all kinds of servers.
Yes.
There were several. The Apple Store was down earlier today. There was an outage of...
Everybody was buying. It was yeah. 10 lying on USB sticks.
Yeah, right.
This is the problem with centralization. I mean, this is the thing you're going to deal with. You know, you're going to have these really big companies as your primary data servers, and if they have a sneeze that develops into a cold, the entire world catches the flu. You know, it's really... It is the scary part of this, and I don't think that Amazon has done a tremendously good job of reassuring people, and yet they continue to get big name customers like the U.S. government.
There's a movie with Matt Damon coming out that is pretty much a metaphor for this. The whole sneeze catching the cold. Boy, it's also that would spoil a movie. I'm not going to say that, but yeah, this is I think Amazon, in a weird way, the fact that we know about all of these Amazon outages shows how good their uptime is, because it's notable. It's a huge deal when they go down. It's not something where, you know, a Microsoft vulnerability, everyone's like, well, yeah, they've got Microsoft vulnerabilities all the time. You know, a new piece of malware, yeah, there's new malware all the time. So it becomes a big deal. And I think people, you got to remember, 99.999% uptime is still hours and hours of downtime over the course of a year.
Right.
Apple is being sued by 27,000 South Koreans. We've mentioned this case before, but it's actually been filed today, a class action lawsuit alleging Apple illegally collected and stored location data for a year. The suit seeks 1 million won in damages per member. That's about $936 in U.S. currency per member. So that would be, how much would that be total?
If their case was won and there's 27,000 South Koreans who each want just under $1,000 each, that would be Apple paying out $27 million in the worst case scenario for them.
Now, this means this doesn't mean this, but there have been previous cases that Apple has lost in Korea. There's no other cases anywhere in the rest of the world over this. This was the thing that happened back in April where people discovered a file that had cached location data. Apple's changed the way that file works, but this suit refers to the things that were happening before they made that change. Attorney Kim Hyung-suk, who's prosecuting this class action, won a case against Apple in June for 1 million won. And previously, Korean Communications Commission has fined Apple for collecting users' location data. So does that mean it's likely to lose this case?
I mean, Apple's going to have to do a lot of digging to find some new evidence to stop this from continuing. I mean, I don't think civil cases serve as precedents necessarily for them, for other ones, or for this kind of class action. But now that this is a much bigger case, I mean, maybe Apple wasn't really investing too much. $936 isn't a whole lot of money. Might as well just go, all right, forget it.
It almost seems like Apple might have said, okay, you can have your less than $1,000. It's not too much skin off of our back.
But
this would be a little bit different. I mean, they can still afford this, but certainly don't want to pay out $27 million.
obviously, it's a slippery slope, but you wonder if Apple understands something about the intricacies of the legal systems outside the U.S., because I don't think they're all the same, and I'm just wondering if they realize that they're not really going to win these cases in South Korea. Maybe they have a better chance in the EU, where the legal system is somewhat more similar to ours. But I think that Apple so quietly accepted the first, they paid out $1 million or something already. That may have been their first big mistake, because I think this guy it's the same guy, right, doing this lawsuit. And I think he's just saying, this is easy. Apple's got deep pockets. They did do this. It's easy to prove. They made a mistake. We just keep making them pay for it.
You think it's a little fanboyism, too? Like, Apple is picking on Samsung lately. Korea's homeboys.
Yeah. Oh, that could be. Samsung is... I've been to South Korea, and I've seen the presence that Samsung has there. It is remarkable. They do everything. They don't just make components and technology. They build buildings. They're into everything. It's Samsung and LG and South Korea. It's like three little governments in there.
Yeah. All right. More he said, she said in the Google Facebook relationship. Bradley Horowitz, vice president of Google, he's the guy who works on Google Plus, and Vic Gundotra posted a video on their Google Plus feed that appears to demonstrate Facebook blocking Google Plus links from working in Facebook news feeds. This is them kind of taunting Facebook, saying, oh, you're afraid of us? Why are you blocking invite links on the Facebook news feed? Now, Facebook says, we've seen the video. We have been unable to replicate the experience it shows. And then they go on to explain that they have an algorithm that's anti-spam that often will block links for some users and not for others, just because of the way the algorithm works.
I actually used a service briefly called Manage Flitter that helps people post to Google Plus and then have it automatically post to Twitter or Facebook, that kind of thing. And it worked fine. And that was on a Facebook page, because I always automate things to my page rather than my profile. And I'm not sure how that algorithm may treat links differently on a public page.
Well, Tom, I told you, I'm a lazy Facebook user, and I have Twitter connected to Facebook. So all of my posts go to Facebook. However, there's a rather large percentage of my tweets that never appear on Facebook, and I have no idea why. And I almost feel a little bit like I'm hitting that limit. Maybe I'm almost being seen as a sort of spam. So I just, I tend to want to believe Facebook that there is, they don't like it automated. And what if they're recognizing Google Plus as like a single IP or a single domain, and basically it's triggering the spam effect?
That's interesting. We used to run into that CNET with Google blocking us, because we would all be coming from a single IP, and they'd be like, too many requests have come from this.
Right. Didn't Facebook actually hire a PR agency to run a smear campaign against Google? So couldn't it be within the realm of possibility they decided, you know what, we don't want Plus showing up or being promoted on our site? Like, that's quite a possibility.
I don't think they would go so far as to intentionally block it.
That's why it only works half the time.
I do think that if their algorithm was preferentially blocking it on accident, that they might be very slow to fix that.
Yeah, they're aware.
You know what I'm saying?
We're working on it. We have our best one guy.
Now there's another
screwdriver. He's got a screwdriver.
There's another story kicking around. CNN quoting Sean Ryan, Facebook's director of game partnerships, saying Google is at 5% because they don't have any users. You put it in context, he's basically just saying, like, hey, Google's emulated aspects of our system, which is what they have the right to do. We just need to be better. We've got 700 million users. They've only got 25 million because, but out of context, it really feeds this fire. And there's definitely no love lost between the two
companies.
There's
also Google Plus has been around for, a couple of weeks, and Facebook's kind of...
And it's not even officially open yet.
Right. It's also still closed in the field test.
Let's talk in a couple of years.
I would be frustrated with people saying, so, Google Plus eating your lunch. Like, what are you talking about eating our lunch?
Yeah, not
even. 5% of the users we have.
This is how people love the idea of these companies at war. They love, it's like every time something new comes along, every time a new social platform comes along, what do they say? Oh, is this a Facebook killer? Is this a Twitter killer? And I really hate that, because nothing's a killer. There's a lot of room in the market. It's a question of, it's really sort of a slow, a slow process. And we'll see what happens when Google Plus opens up. I mean, is Facebook watching them closely? Of course. It is Google Plus is using in part the Facebook playbook. We just saw, right, games just came out. Have you guys all played games on Google Plus?
I am quite good at Bejeweled Blitz Beta.
I got a little frustrated with Bubble Island.
After seeing people
the way it saves games.
Complaining about a pain in their hands from playing incessantly, I'm like, I'm not going to start.
Yeah, I got carpal tunnel within like 2 hours.
Mm. Yeah, they're all games that are not my favorite kind of games, where they're all sort of like building stuff. Like, oh, build a community and invite your friends. I'm like, I don't want to do that. I want to run around and shoot things. I get bored. So they're not my favorite kind of games, but I can see that they're just the kind of games that I've seen on Facebook. So, you know, it is kind of a battle that's queuing up, but I don't think it's quite as intense as they're liking to make it right now.
All right, let's say take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Gazelle.com. Great way to get cash for your gadgets or get rid of gadgets responsibly. I've got right here. Original Motorola Razr V3. Whoa. It even has the Singular logo on the back and an antique Singular SIM card inside. Now, this isn't worth any money, but if I go to Gazelle and I type in Motorola Razr V3, I can find it. Well, if I know how to use a computer, I can find it. There it is. It's in the drop-down menu. So they've got it for you. And I just say, like, okay, it's normal wear and tear, slight scuffs. No, you know, it's mostly fine. It's just been used. I've got the AC adapter. I've got the rechargeable battery. I've got the original cables. Oh, yep, free of water damage. What can you give me? Now, if you've got something newer, you're going to get money. But here they're saying, okay, you know what? We can't offer you any money, but we'll recycle it for you. And they responsibly recycle. You can go to their website. You can find out all of the details about recycling. If you've got newer gadgets, if you've got a game console or a phone from the last couple of years, you're actually going to get some money here. And as a Twit listener, as a watcher of TNT, you actually can get 5% more than everybody else. You just use the offer code Twit when you check out. Don't just sell it. Gazelle it. Easy way to sell your gadgets. If you're wondering, well, how do I get rid of it? They actually give you a label that you print up, throw it in a box, put the label on it, take it to the post office, goes to them. They send you the money. You can get it by PayPal. You can get it by check. There's all kinds of ways to get it. Amazon gift card. And even if you're lazy like me, you can have them send you the box. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I'm going to do with recycling this Razr V3. I'm going to have them send me the box. I'll check out with that.
Hey, they're offering.
Yeah, exactly.
So let them.
And so they send you the box and the label, and then you just take the box and drop it off. So check it out, gazelle.com. Use that offer code TWIT when you check out. If you are not recycling something, if you're getting money for something, use that offer code TWIT for 5% bonus. Okay, Apple is considering investing in Sharp. Because of LCD displays, MF Global FXA Securities Analyst David Rubenstein says Apple's considering a $1 billion investment in a Sharp LCD plant. He thinks it's highly possible in order to secure a stable supply of screens for iPhones and iPads. Now, a lot of people have been suspecting that Samsung's PLS display is a likely candidate for the Retina display in the next iPad, because everybody thinks there's going to be a Retina display in the next iPad. The PLS display is a 1280 by 768 resolution screen. Also, remember, Apple reportedly spent $5.7 billion on Samsung parts in 2010. So one way to look at this is, you know, Apple's in a war with Samsung over patents. They're not too happy. They may be looking for other partners to go to provide their parts.
Apple also spent a good portion of this year trying to stock their stores with iPad 2s, and people stood waiting for blocks in line trying to get one because they never had enough. So I think this is also Apple saying, well, we're going to have a next generation iPad one of these days, and we want people to be able to buy them.
Yeah, and investing $1 billion puts more of an ownership in the factory. Now, this is different than the contractual relationship we've seen with Samsung that's kind of going, it's under fire with these lawsuits. I mean, there's no way that people want to honor the contracts as well. But if you have a part ownership in Sharp, or this plant, you're more likely to continue that relationship. On top of that, I mean, like Sarah said, they have to make a new iPad at some point, and they need to have a supply. And with their current fight with Samsung, it's probably not going to be Samsung.
And as this report was saying, they've got to diversify. They have to be careful. You know, they have things like the Japan earthquake, which disrupted their supply. Disruptions in just political and economic status of different countries. I mean, Apple makes the number one tablet basically in the world right now. When the iPad 3 comes out, it'll still be number one, and the demand will increase sharply. And they've got to make sure that they have the parts on hand. especially because it's not even the same parts for the previous iPad. They've got a brand new screen, so they've got to cover all their bases here. And I do agree with the whole point about the, you know, the battle with Samsung. I think things are going to get incredibly dicey there if they don't sort of kiss and make up.
Is this sort of a complex game of chicken where Apple's trying to get a better deal out of Samsung and they've got all of these battles going on with patents in the hope of eventually bringing them to the table and declaring peace?
I don't know if it's chicken.
I don't know if Apple plays chicken with anybody. I feel like Apple steamrolls. Apple just sort of sees its path, plans it out, and tries to make sure it has all it needs to get it done. I don't think it sweats other people very much. It gets angry. It'll go, if you poke it, it'll poke you back hard. But I just don't think, they just have never seemed like the kind of company that sort of, you know, positions basically to get a better position, you know, does something to sort of negotiate later on.
Yeah, part of that, they also, there was those rumors that Apple has contracted with another processor manufacturer, because part of the billions of dollars Apple's paid to Samsung is for the processors. Mm-hmm. So I think it's TSMC, that's the other company out there. So I'm thinking, I agree with Lance on this, I think it's just a plan B.
All right, new study from the University of Illinois, go Illini,
the fighting Illini.
Yeah, is out and shows that fans may defend criticisms of their favorite brands because they view them as a threat to their self-image. A study will be published in the next issue of Journal of Consumer Psychology. And up till now, the interesting part about this is brand relationships. It almost makes me puke a little in my mouth when I say words like that. But brand relationships were thought of as interpersonal relationships. So if I shop at a store, it's like I have a relationship, and they can ruin that relationship the same as any friend or relative or girlfriend or boyfriend can ruin that relationship. But this study says, no, we actually see brands as extensions of ourselves. So when that brand, say Toyota, has a recall or Apple is criticized for something they do, we see that as a criticism or a failure of ourselves.
Right.
Or we're worried that that's how other people see it as. Mm-hmm. You know, you bought the iPhone 4. It doesn't even work if you hold it the wrong way. Therefore, you're an idiot.
But this finally answers a question for me. Why, when I write a column that criticizes one of these companies, do I get just lambasted? I mean, these people come out of the woodwork and they call me every name under the sun. And meanwhile, the company that I'm criticizing, I'll have a conversation. They'll be like, yeah, you were kind of right. Or we saw we did something wrong here. I'm like, what is wrong with these people? Because now I know they believe I'm attacking them personally, which is crazy because I'm not. But that's obviously what they think. But I also would say, by the way, I don't think this is true for all brands. I think it's certain brands where people create this true affinity.
And it's not true for all people. The researchers performed two experiments, one on a group of 30 women, another on 170 undergraduates. And they found that those who had high self-brand connections exhibited fanboy behavior. There were people with low self-brand connections who are like, you know, their personalities did not get tied up in brands. So I see folks in the chat room saying, I don't see myself as an extension of Cottonelle. That's because you don't have, maybe you don't have that high self-brand connection, but other people do. And again, I think you're right, Lance, not to all brands.
Do you think that once this information is presented to a lot of people, will they actually think about it and change their behavior and they go, oh, wait, I didn't realize I was doing that? Or do you think people will still, they find this out, continue to be outraged that you bought a different phone and you bought a different laptop? And
the latter, absolutely.
Still outraged? Or they continue to
be outraged if you say a bad or cross word about their cherished product or brand.
Or,
that's it, you know?
Since this is from the University of Illinois, people who don't like them will discount this news entirely.
Oh, don't you dare say a bad word about the university.
Exactly. I went there by choice, so it must be the best.
Yes, it is the
exactly.
best.
Exactly. I went there because they're the only people to give me a full ride, so they must be the best. Let's move on to a great Ars Technica story that you should definitely take a look at if you're interested in how the internet backbone works and you want to know more about net neutrality disputes, bandwidth caps, this or that. A little background here about transit agreements. We've talked about peering and transit in regards to the whole L3 controversy with Comcast before. If you request a website, you go to a website address that's not on your ISP's network or a network it peers with, right? Because there's all these different networks interconnected, hence the internet. Let's say you're wanting a site in the United Kingdom. So your ISP, your local ISP, may actually send that request to a transit partner. They may have a transit deal, and it's usually a flat megabit per second deal. So you say, okay, we're going to send that traffic on to this partner who will get it to the United Kingdom and get that BBC site to you or whatever it is you're asking for. Now, when they have to send it to another partner in order for it to arrive, in other words, there's your ISP sending the traffic to a transit partner, and then that transit partner has to send it to someone else, it costs them money. Mm-hmm. So that makes it more expensive, but they don't charge more for it. A new paper from Georgia Tech and Stanford researchers argues that that approach is inefficient, and that just charging more for off-net traffic isn't optimal. It can't say, oh, well, this bit's not connected to us, so we're going to charge you more for that. They came up with a structure of two or three tiers that, when structured properly, account for demand and cost to deliver are the best way of making money. Now, the reason they're going through all of this bit wrangling and all of this sturm and drang about, well, how do we make sure we charge just the right amount for the bits, is that the costs of transit have fallen an average of 30% a year. Costs of bandwidth on the backbone are plummeting. So, in other words, it's the opposite reason that your local ISP wants to tier you with video. It's not because, in their case, they're not lowering the price. They just want to jack the price up and up and up. The cost of transit have actually been falling, so they're trying to make sure that they're charging as efficiently as possible because there's so much competition on the backbone.
And the study, though, is suggesting that it would be inefficient to charge this the way that they want to do this in the actual business
world. They're saying too simple is inefficient and too complex is actually inefficient.
But do you think that just because it's inefficient, that if it makes more money, do you think that the businesses will continue doing it this way? Because, I mean, these in the abstract that are discussed at in the study, they go, we offered two contributions. We developed a novel way of mapping traffic. Do you think people are going to adopt their method?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's what the story is saying, is on the backbone operators are dying for this kind of guidance because every little cent counts right now because the prices have been falling so much.
But it's so funny to me when I read this story, it's a complex story, but what it made me think about is, you know, I think of electrons, you know, you say you make a request to a server and instantaneously it's hitting your computer. I don't think about where it goes, but this really makes you think about the pathways. And in spite of the speed, there is some heavy duty work going on in the background. It sounds to me, you know, if I understand this correctly, that some of the guys who are doing the hardest work are getting paid the least. But I do understand the complexity. I mean, you certainly can't measure every day, every sort of bit coming out of these handlers and say, okay, you did this much, so we've been keeping track and you get X amount of dollars and you get this. Having a tiered system that can somehow trickle down to these guys when it's been the tougher path, that almost seems to make sense, as long as it doesn't mean I'm going to pay more money.
Oh, no, that's actually what I took out of this story the most, was all of this stuff in the backbone apparently has no effect on the amount I pay or the bandwidth I receive. The ISPs on the local end that are delivering to end users are just insulated. Their markets are entirely confused and obfuscated from what's actually happening on the backbone. If there was the same amount of competition in the local marketplace as there is on the backbone, we'd have incredibly fast, incredibly cheap internet. That's what this story tells me.
Oh,
you're living in a dream world. Fast internet at low prices.
It is. It's my dream. Let's move on to the news views. How are those HP touchpads doing? Well, according to a source talking to All Things D, not so good. After selling only 25,000 of its 270,000 units, Best Buy wants HP to take the units back. Take them back. We can't sell them. Other vendors are also having trouble unloading the touchpad, including Walmart and Micro Center. A recent Woot sale only moved 612 units. Yikes.
Wow. People tend to get bristly and want to sue over location tracking. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. But according to a report by J-Wire, 53% of the people that it surveyed would love to trade their location data for ads or coupons or promotions. J-Wire collected data from a random selection of 2,800 J-Wire customers, along with data from 450,000 public Wi-Fi hotspots. So It's kind of good news for phone makers. If you want to spy on your users, just give them discount codes, and then they'll be perfectly fine with it.
Hey, can I have all your private information? I've got a, here's a coupon.
Sure.
Panera Bread. I love that place.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Yes, I'm right here.
I think I got cheated.
Great location data.
I'm at an undisclosed location.
The PS3 and Xbox have both been redesigned, but how about the Nintendo Wii? Nintendo announced that a new Wii is coming to Europe for the holidays. Like any good streamlining, the new Wii will be physically smaller, and the system will be bundled with the Wii Remote Plus controller with a nunchuck, along with two games, Wii Sports and Wii Play. However, bad news for the six remaining GameCube fans. You will not be able to play GameCube games on the new edition of the Wii.
Yeah, Europeans don't want that anyway. Jason Howell, are you ready?
I think I'm ready. I was ready until I read this morning.
You are going to be paralyzed into never buying a new phone, my friend.
I already am.
Some new images of the Motorola Droid HD have appeared. It's a super slim phone, and Gadget estimates it around 8.5 millimeters thick, would come with a 4.5-inch display, a front-facing camera, and an 8-megapixel 1080p rear-facing camera. Inside, there ought to be a 1 gigahertz dual-core processor and a gigabyte of RAM. It's a nice-looking phone.
We'll see.
You're never buying a phone.
I know, right? I'm never buying a phone.
Two men in the UK have been sentenced to four-year jail terms after setting up two Facebook events. What were the Facebook events about? Well, they were entitled Smash Down in Northwich Town and the Warrington Riots, and they were attended by the event coordinators and police officers who arrested them.
One of them was attended. The other one didn't even happen.
Yeah, and nobody else showed up to the events, apparently, either. So the men were sentenced for trying to incite others to riot. 4 years.
It doesn't matter if you're unpopular, though. You can still get arrested for inciting. Look at that. Rod Beckerstrom, president and chief executive of the Internet Corporation of four assigned names and numbers, the global body which manages the technical infrastructure of the web, has announced he will not seek another term. Beckerstrom took over ICANN in July 2009, and his term ends next summer, July 1st, 2012.
I nominate Sarah.
President of ICANN.
Yay.
Okay. Sarah for ICANN president.
I second. It's already done.
Time for our coverage of Patent Wars. In continuing coverage of patent wars, Thomson Reuters placing a new map online to help you keep track of who's suing who, although it looks more like a subway map than a patent wars map.
Yeah, you just transfer from Google over to Samsung.
And now Zynga pulled into the patent wars, just got hit with a patent infringement charge from a company called Agincourt Gaming. Unlike those non-practicing entities adorably nicknamed patent trolls, Agincourt actually makes games for Facebook. In its complaint, Agincourt says a number of Zynga games, including Farmville, infringe on Agincourt's patents. Back in May, Zynga also was sued by the makers of Oregon Trail over intellectual property concerns as well.
Boy, I wish I had some champagne or something, because the U.S. patent... All right, let's pop open the bubbly, because the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has just issued your 8th million patent.
Yay!
Maybe you could do the
honors. Yeah, I'll open it after the show.
Way back in 1836, the PTO issued patent number 1. In 1911, it issued patent number 1 million. So who earned the 8 millionth patent, you might wonder? It was Second Sight Medical Products for its visual prosthesis apparatus that enhances visual perception for people who have gone blind due to outer retinal degeneration.
That actually sounds very useful.
I think they deserve a patent. Patent.
Good luck with that Second Sight.
Happy 8 million.
They should have got a free patent for that.
After the 8 millionth and 9 millionth.
There's a patent for that.
And in a related war, peace. Wait a second, peace. A group of music publishers that joined a class action lawsuit filed against YouTube in 2007 have reached a settlement. The suit accused YouTube of encouraging users to upload pirated video clips of TV shows, films, and music videos. Thanks to the agreement, music publishers can license Google the right to sync their music with videos posted by YouTube users, and YouTube will pay the royalties.
Excellent. Wow. Peace in our time. Maybe Viacom will follow. Not. Time for the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Ed McNichol emailed Boing Boing, and he is part of a research vessel off the Oregon coast, research vessel Thompson, engaged in the Visions 11 expedition. They are streaming live high-def video from the sea floor. using the ROV Ropos from the Canadian Scientific Submersible Facility. You can go there and they will have different things live. Right now, that we're lucky, they're actually live right now from the bottom of the ocean. And when they're not live, they'll show edited highlights from previous expeditions. Of course, right now, you're not seeing much.
I mean, it really does look like a floor.
Or something on the bottom.
I think it's a screensaver.
It's more interesting at other times, I promise.
I saw a snake.
Yeah.
I think. A snake. Would you call it a sea snake? No.
Maybe. Oh, there's something. Crab.
There's a flat crab.
I see rotation.
It's the bottom of the ocean, people.
I know.
It's not always that exciting.
It's pretty cool, though.
Robots like this aren't much different than what they've got on Mars. You know, the Mars rover. You know, they get some information. They're semi-autonomous, but they are kind of, you know, guiding them a little bit. It's really kind of cool what they're able to do with them. And I guess at some point he could reach down and pick up stuff if he wanted to, and maybe they can analyze it. But at this point, there's nothing at the bottom of the sea. It kind of looks like a floor, a floor in my house.
A sea floor, if you will.
I hope that robot decorates and adds some things. This is really bland, and I'm hoping maybe a nice
great
couch
somewhere.
This is absolutely fascinating. And if you agree, go to www.interactiveoceans.washington.edu/visions11, and you can see what's happening down there on the ocean floor. It's just as interesting as space, in my
opinion. Why aren't the crabs moving?
I don't know.
They
don't look so good. Let's move on to the calendar.
An animation from Microsoft kicks off LinuxCon this morning.
What? Microsoft kicked off
LinuxCon?
Yeah,
they were wishing Linux a happy 20th birthday.
It was kind of a cute little video.
Yeah, it is cute. Microsoft doesn't seem to care that it's also Larry Ellison's birthday, but we do.
Hey.
Happy 67th, buddy.
Yeah, good luck with your Google
suit. You and Linux. Share a birthday. T-Mobile BlackBerry Bold 9900 will arrive August 31st for $300 on contract. And if you're a business customer, pre-sales have started today. The HP Pre 3 is now shipping in the UK. Palm's own Eurostar actually has it for about 300 British pounds or about 492 American dollars unlocked. HP also says that it's coming soon to the U.S., so that's good news for anybody who wants the Pre-3. And Verizon is adding LTE to 15 more U.S. markets tomorrow, August 18th, including Omaha, Tucson, and Provo, and they're expanding coverage in four others. So whatever, WiMAX, whatevs.
Apparently...
Where are you?
AT&T can only install them in blurry photos from Apple stores.
Yeah.
On to the emails. TNT at twit.tv. David Woodward says, I know I'm a bit late to the game on this, but a few weeks back, there was a lot of buzz about Google Plus not allowing username pseudonyms. During that discussion, there was a brief mention of possible solutions involving username verification. And I was surprised that I never heard any mention of the verification system that is already in place at null.google.com, knol.google.com. At one point in time, it was even integrated into the generic profiles view, where it placed a green circle or check mark on verified profiles. But now, this only shows up when you view a user profile through the Knoll interface. It's been a while since I verified my account, but if memory serves me correctly, it was a quick and painless process involving a $0 transaction on my credit card. So, I mean, we can debate all day whether there should be a real name policy or not, but that is pretty interesting that there already was a system for this that Google has in place with the failed experiment.
It was hidden very well in Knoll.
Yeah.
I was going to say, nobody knows anything about that. If they want to do it, I mean, this should be pretty straightforward, although Twitter hasn't been doing much verification lately anymore. It's hard to know whether they half deny that it even exists, even though every once in a while people get verified. It would make sense. Google, has all the sort of early adopters, maybe do a quick process and verify all those people in there. They'll just be their foot soldiers for further success.
Next email from Mike in Otigo, New York. Hey, TNT crew, I just wanted to comment on the story that you ran on yesterday's episode about Fox and ABC delaying their shows by 8 days. Other networks have been doing this for quite some time, and the 8 delay is fine. The problem is there's no consistency in these types of policies. When I cut the cord about 2 years ago, my wife and I had a couple shows we wanted to watch. We wanted to make sure that we had on our DVR every night. At that time, it was pretty easy to watch them the day after they aired online. So to save some money, we cut the cord, plugged the PC into the big screen, but it's gotten more complicated. Now we're starting to give up on shows. We used to follow 15 to 20 series. Now we're down to 3. At this point, our evenings are filled with other things. Video games, card games, internet surfing, or downright socializing with our friends. Our TV hours have decreased dramatically, and we're okay with that.
You know, I think that's the biggest thing that, that these folks are facing is competition from other stuff.
Yeah. It might not increase piracy. Yeah. It might increase people talking to each other, like in real life.
Yeah, well, people do that already, but there's so many things you can do on the internet and even organize things to do in real life.
Right. There's competition from all the other screens. You know, your phone, your iPad, your big screen TV sometimes is like the distant poor relation at times. You know, it's the last thing you look at when you seem to have nothing else to do on your phone or iPad.
Right, and it just kind of makes you depressed. All right. Thanks, everybody, for submitting stories at our Reddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. Big thanks to folks like Comfixer87, Dr. Mom, White Hat TX, TM204, Pete C., and more. Go to technewstoday.reddit.com to vote on what stories we will consider for use in the show. And don't forget to buy yourself a brick. We still got a few spaces out there. If you want to get your message up on the wall, go to bricks.twit.tv. And I walk past them. I look at them every day because there's so many up there. It's fun to just see all the different messages. So if you'd like to have one, bricks.twit.tv is the place to go. Lance Ulanoff, man in transition, thanks so much for joining us. Let folks know where they can find what you're doing these days and keep up with what you're up to.
Thanks, and thanks for having me on. You can find me a couple places. I was obviously on Twitter at Lance Ulanoff with no space. You can also find me at www.lanceulanoff.com. I'm also posting to my little blog on Tumblr called Tecoti, T-E-C-H-O-T-I, where I'm putting my random thoughts, some drawings, some posts, my recent experiences with the Google Chromebook. So easy to find me pretty much anywhere.
Also, right. you could go ahead and download. You could buy manintransition.com. It's available.
Now it's not.
I'm writing it now.
All right, thanks everybody for watching. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. Email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call. Our number is 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.
Some nice jazz hands, Lance.
Thank you.
Good stuff.
Thank you very much.
Hey!
All right.